WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Here every Sunday morning from 9 to 11 to take your calls, your questions, 404-872-0750. We're still talking about this relationship between stocks and bonds. And following up on our last caller, Michael had asked about, he brought up SCANA, which is SCANA, the energy company. Think of that as a really utility type company. And again, you probably get a SCANA bill for your natural gas. And that is, and he said, hey, wait a minute, that the multiple, the PE multiple on this stock is pretty low. So that looks good. And it yields 6.2%. That looks pretty good. Well, you've got to remember though, that there's more to the story. So you pull up a price chart for SCANA and it's down 33% over the last 3 years. Where the S&P 500 over that same period of time is up 30%. So you've got to be really careful about just looking at a yield, and just because a stock looks cheap and it yields a lot, doesn't necessarily mean it's a perfect entry point. Sometimes when a stock yields too much, there's an issue, or there could be an issue. And very often, if a stock is yielding more than it has in the past, it's because the price has dropped significantly. And all of a sudden, you've got this big percentage yield that might look good, but can also be a trap. And you run into a scenario where a stock can quickly or easily cut a dividend. So you've just got to be careful about that. There's a lot to the story when it comes to finding companies. You don't just look at dividend yield, which Michael was asking. Do I look at dividend yield? Do I look at price to earnings multiple? The answer is you've got to look at all of these pieces, free cash flow, all of these things combined. And as I look at equities, or we look at stocks, I want three things. I want a diversified income stream. So I want a company that is not a one-trick pony, that has multiple lines of businesses or selling to an extraordinary amount of customers in a really large base. So that's number one. Number two, I want to see a reasonable level of debt. They haven't borrowed too much. So this is an analyst would refer to this as having low or serviceable debt or net debt, which really just means they have no problem paying their bills and they haven't overextended themselves with debt. And then three, I want to see consistent earnings. Essentially, what does their profit picture look like? There's a lot of different ways there's a lot of different metrics that measure profitability. You can look at earnings, you can look at net income, you can look at free cash flow, but you've got to see a consistency of a company doing this over many, many years. And if you put all that together, that's the kind of company that I'm comfortable with. The other thought is that I like to look at dividend history. So if you look at a company that has slowly ratcheted higher what they pay out to investors for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, and the longer the better, then it's an important piece of owning that company. And the company, if they have a history of dividend payouts, they want to maintain that history. So it becomes very important for them to stay consistent and ratchet the dividend higher every year. And that's a sign that they continue to expand, continue to grow, continue to have profitability, so they can pay out more and more and more to shareholders. And that's, so you put all those pieces together, and that's what I'm looking for when I'm owning or buying a company, and hopefully holding that company for a very, very long period of time. 404-872-0750. I'm going to continue to go to the phones here. Sandy joins us on the line from Dallas, Georgia. Sandy, what's going on? How can I help?
Yes, I'm interested in treasury bonds and purchasing them, and I'm not sure how to do that.
Okay, well, where are your investments? Where do you hold your investments now?
Well, right now I have some liquid money that I would love to put into treasury bonds.
Okay, so something to a little bit more income. So it's probably sitting in a bank or credit union.
Correct.
And it's not getting a whole lot of interest. You know, that's the other interesting point here is that rates have really started to go up, and the Federal Reserve, Sandy, has ratcheted the federal funds rate up. And even though banks are now making more on their deposits, and credit unions are making more on the cash that you're parking with them, it's not as though they have turned around and started to pay you a whole lot just yet. So you see this real lag in what banks, credit unions paying out or ratcheting up money market rates, even though now they're starting to make real money because the federal funds rate goes higher. It's not as though they turn around and the next day they say, "Oh, Sandy has a bunch of cash sitting here. Let's pay her 1.5% on your cash." They still haven't done that, right? So, and I don't think they're in a real rush to do that. So you're probably not going to be able to buy treasury bonds through them. So, but any large brokerage company, it makes it very, very easy to do. So if you had an account at Fidelity Investments, let's say, or Schwab, you can go in, you can call an advisor there, or you can even do this online. And again, I would recommend obviously calling somebody to have them help you with this, but you can buy U.S. Treasuries very, very easily. But you just need an account in an investment type of firm, Sandy.
Okay.
I'd look at something like a Fidelity, a Schwab, any of those places you can easily buy treasuries in increments of $1,000 and put your cash to work. And that's exactly where I'd be headed. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. Going to continue to go to the phones. Mike joins us on the line. Mike from Sandy Springs. What's going on, Mike? How can I help?
Hey, Wes, I've just got a quick question. I got a mother who's got a significant amount of money in a single state municipal bond fund.
Fund. Okay, it's a fund, not a single municipal bond, okay?
Correct. And I know interest rates are going to be going up, and I know about this relationship. I'm just curious what your thought is on, you know, are the prices going to go? What kind of downside are we looking at?
So good question. So this really has to do with maturity, right? The length or duration of a bond. So if you buy a bond, and this is probably a good segue into what I wanted to talk about today anyway. If let's say you own a 30-year municipal bond, right, and it pays 3%, and that means the life of that bond, it doesn't mature for 30 years, let's say. Or let's say you bought it last year, there's 29 years left. Well, as interest rates go higher, and now you can go buy a new bond at a higher interest rate, that old bond that pays a lower percentage rate becomes less and less valuable because you can go buy the same bond in the same credit quality, let's say, but just has a higher coupon or a higher yield. And that starts to hurt the price of an old or existing bond, right? And sure. if you think about it in terms of these long periods of time, a really long-term, low-yielding bond will become very unattractive because it has this long life of paying a lesser coupon, right? So it really matters when it comes to buying bonds, it really matters how long or what the duration or the maturity is on an individual bond, or if you own a fund, you want to look at what the duration is on that fund or the average maturity of that fund is. Now, you can buy a long-term bond fund, an intermediate bond fund, a short-term bond fund. So the bond fund itself has some sort of mandate. And I think that it's going to be real challenging over the next, let's call it the next year or so, as rates continue to move higher. If you own really long-term bond funds, you're going to expect the price to actually come down a little bit. Now, when you've got really high quality, you're not worried about the municipalities not paying their interest. And if you own treasury bonds, I'm not worried about the U.S. government not paying their interest. But I would be worried about getting locked up into a bond that has a really long duration. The last thing I want right now is a 30-year treasury or a 30-year municipal bond if rates are going up. So I think if you look at your mom's fund, Mike, just look at the duration on that and know that there's going to be some downside in price for a little while as rates go back up. And when they level out and we get to a place where you don't see interest rates going up and up and up every single day, that's when that to me, and I don't think that that's that far away. You know, I don't think we just keep screaming higher here. We get 3%, then 3.5%, then 4% of the 10-year treasury. I think it's going to be much more gradual than that. So sure. Just understand that you're going to see a little bit of price pressure as rates keep going up. But very often, that is offset by the income that you'll be getting from the fund. So sure. So if you have an intermediate to shorter term bond fund, I still think you're fine. I still own those intermediate and certainly short term bonds. And I think over the course of the next year, as rates kind of settle in and figure out a new, slightly higher level, and I think we're getting closer to that, then that relationship will calm down. And you're not going to see giant losses every single time you open up your investment account because rates are going up and up and up and up. So that's my thought here. As long as there's a high credit quality, there's still a lot of safety and stability in fixed income. We're going to continue to talk about this right here on Money Matters. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters. Find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. More Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Back to the phones here, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. 0750 1-800 WSB Talk. Scott joins us from Woodstock. Scott, what's going on? How can I help?
Hey, Wes. Thanks for taking my call. Really enjoy the show. Just had a question. I am a teacher contributing to the teacher retirement system and will have a pension when I retire around age 60. And
awesome.
Just wanted to know.
Awesome. So I meet with lots of teachers, and it's funny. I guess I want to just continue to remind teachers that pension is it's really significant, and there's not that many institutions or companies, and I know this isn't, TRS is not a company, but, or careers, let's say, that have as significant of a pension as TRS does. So just a reminder, when you get frustrated being a teacher, and I know that happens all the time because it's such a hard job, and you say to yourself, why am I doing this? I'm not getting paid enough. Just a reminder that pension is really, really significant. So let me keep going back to your question, Scott.
Yeah, no, that's a good reminder. My question was regarding bonds, and do I need to invest in bonds since I do have that pension?
You know, that's an interesting question because so for all of our listeners, what Scott's saying is this, hey, I've got a pension, and that pension itself is like a bond. It's you can look at it as fixed income. You can say, hey, I've got $2,000 a month coming in no matter what, $3,000 a month coming in no matter what. It's very much like owning a really high quality bond. And for some folks, and this is probably goes back to your personal preference, Scott, and your own kind of risk tolerance, because I would look at that and I'd say, yeah, that's very much like a bond. And that could, to some extent, replace how much I need to have in bonds, right? However, on the other side of the equation, if you have 100% stocks and your entire, let's say you've saved in your 403B or and elsewhere, it really depends. You could have an all equity portfolio, but there's going to be a lot of volatility. And for a lot of people, if you're that heavy in equities, it's almost just difficult to sleep at night. When we go through these corrections, it's hard to stomach, and investing gets emotional. And I would just be careful about getting 100% into equities just because you have a pension. I think you can be maybe a little bit more aggressive otherwise, not having that monthly amount coming in as a guaranteed level, but I still believe in balance with the investments that you do have. You're listening to Money Matters. We're talking bonds. Do they still protect against stock market fall as markets correct? That when Money Matters returns.
It's It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We are here, rain or shine. I know it's raining here today. You are snuggled up listening to radio here on a Sunday morning. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. It's 60 degrees here on Peachtree, and we are here, rain or shine. And here we are with markets up for the week, up about a third of a percent for the Dow Jones this week, about a half a percent for the S&P 500. We have now recovered about half of the correction that we saw only weeks ago. Just a very quick, violent 7-8 day correction, and now we've kind of recovered about half of that ground. Well, during that period of time, you looked at your account, and even if it was diversified, you didn't see the bond side or the more conservative side help out a whole lot. When markets were down almost 3,000 points, you saw, of course, you expect your stocks, your ETFs, anything stock related to go head south. But you've also become accustomed to, hey, well, I own these bonds, and they're the conservative side of the spectrum. Aren't they supposed to kind of go up when my equities correct or stocks go down? And that's what's happened in the past. So let's go over this question. I think it's so important. Are bonds still safe? Do they still hedge against stock market drops? Let's go back and remember as a quick refresher, 2008. The S&P 500 was down 36%, but on the other side of the spectrum, three-month government bonds went up about 1.5%. 10-year Treasury bonds returned 20% during that same calendar year. In the bear market that started in 2000, that went 2000, 2001, 2002, 3 years in a row, market drops 9%, 12%, 22% in a row. And during that period of time, those respectively, but the 10-year Treasury bond total return here was up 16.5, was up 5.5, and was up 15.5. So it really hedged against your stock market losses. Essentially, stocks went down, bonds went up. That strategy worked really well. And it's also worked the opposite way as well. In 2013, the S&P 500 was up 32%. 32% in the calendar year. Total returns for the 10-year Treasury bond were down 9%. In 2009, when stocks rebounded from the great financial crisis and finished 2009 up 26%, 10-year Treasury bond total return down 11%. So what's at work here is the question. And the primary relationship that we all have to remember, we've been talking about this today here on the show, primary relationship for bond total returns has to do more with interest rates and less to do with what stocks are doing. So you may look at your portfolio and say, hey, my stocks are up, my bonds are down, or vice versa, or say my stocks are down, my bonds are down. It's less about what stocks are doing, and it's more about what interest rates are doing. Bond prices and interest rates move in an inverse relationship. When interest rates fall, bond prices rise. So naturally, when we see big interest rate moves in either direction, so either whether they're going up or going down, we see overall bond returns. And that's whether you own individual bonds, this happens to, whether it's bond ETFs, bond mutual funds, they respond. Prices respond. Now, over time, and this is why this gets a little bit complicated, if you think about it, the correlation between, it really matters on the duration, though. So think of it this way. Over time, because investors have made positive returns in both asset classes. So over time, the reason we want to own both, I own stocks, I own bonds, because they both made you money over time. And so over time, stocks, let's say on average, have been about 10% a year. On average, that's including dividends. Bonds, on average, about 5% a year. And I'm looking at the 10-year Treasury bond. So stocks pay dividends, bonds pay interest. So you get cash flow from both. And those are always, a dividend is always positive. You can't get a negative dividend. You can't get a negative interest payment. So you have returns over time are positive. But it doesn't mean that they move in the exact same direction all the time. So if you think about it this way, in any given day or week, so let's call it short-term periods of time, even one-year periods, stocks and bonds, they can move in opposite directions. And that can help reduce your overall portfolio fluctuation. Recently, we saw this, but if you think about it this way, over time, there's a direct correlation over the long run. Over a long period of time, over 5 years and 10 years and 20 and 30 years, because both asset classes have made you money, there's a direct correlation between values of what you make or what you earn in both asset classes. Now, recently we saw this what is a direct correlation over time, again, moving in the same direction, essentially the same direction. Recently we saw that correlation change and go negative. So stocks went down. It worked against you. So it was a direct relationship because they both moved in the same direction. Stocks went down and bonds went down. So what gives? So here's this is, let's talk about interest rates for a minute. Typically, and I mean typically is an important word here, as economies and markets, they never follow rules perfectly to the letter. You know that. But typically when interest rates are falling, it's because the economy is in bad shape. And the Federal Reserve, is lowering rates in an attempt to make borrowing money cheaper. So it can help stimulate the economy, get us out of an economic slump, get us out of recession. Hence, we typically see falling stock prices as corporate earnings are going down or contracting. But usually during that same period of time, when interest rates fall, that means bond prices are going up. So they act as this investment counterbalance in times of, let's call it, economic stress. Now, what about when rates are going up? And this is exactly what we've been seeing over the last several months. If interest rates are going up, typically it means the economy is in good shape and getting better. And that's exactly what's happening right now. If you think about it, unemployment is one of the lowest levels we've seen in history. 4.1%, probably headed even lower than that. We're starting to see wages go higher, so we're getting a little bit of wage inflation. Housing prices have continued to recover significantly. Consumer confidence is high. Manufacturing is actually still doing really well. It's translating back to company earnings are doing very well in this environment. And that tip, so when we get a scenario where rates are going up like we're seeing, it typically means that stocks are doing well over a longer period of time as well. But during that period of time, when rates are going back higher, that's when you're going to see bond prices suffer a little bit. So bonds suffer as rates begin to climb, in part by the Federal Reserve trying to push up interest rates, and then the market follows suit. And expectations for inflation and further interest rate hikes accelerate. So that's the scenario we're seeing right now. Stocks have done well. We've got to remember, even though there was a correction of over 10%, here we are. Stocks are still up about 15% over the past 12 months. In fact, let's go back and see as of today. Let's go back and look at a one-year chart for the S&P 500. If we go back, S&P 500 over the past year, and this is, you know, we've gotten back some of that correction. We're about halfway back from making up the losses that we saw in a correction. Over the last year, markets are up 16%. S&P 500 is up 16%, and that doesn't even count the dividend. So really, your total return is around 17.5-18%. So we've got to look at over the longer period of time. Stocks have done well over the last 12 months, despite the correction that we saw earlier this year. But the correction from February was in part due to fears of an economy getting too hot. Again, all of the things I just mentioned, unemployment low, wages going up, Fed is having to hike interest rates to make sure things don't overheat too much. So in the short run, and this kind of gets back to what we're seeing today, in the short run, we've seen this inverse relationship between stocks and bonds break down. Inverse meaning is, hey, stocks go down, bonds go up. Well, we saw stocks go down and bonds go down. So stocks corrected for a variety of reasons. We had, number one, we had over two years without a correction at all. So we were overdue. And then there's this fear of too many Fed interest rate hikes. And if the Fed does it, it hikes rates too many times, it gets too aggressive, then that can, of course, slow the economy down and kind of work against us. At the same time, though, interest rates spiked. So they went from about 2% all the way up to right around 3% on the 10-year Treasury. Today, we settled at just shy of 2.9%. So we're knocking on the door of 3%. And that has taken a little bit of a chunk out of bond prices. Does this mean the relationship is broken forever? The relationship, I mean, between stocks and bonds. The answer is no. The bottom line here is that once interest rates normalize and kind of settle down from getting to where they are going to settle down, the 10-year, let's say it needs to get to, and I don't know where that number is, but we're obviously getting closer to that. It might be in the 3% range, and then that settles down. It might be 3.5. But once we get back to a more normal range of 3.5-4%, that more inverse correlation on a given day, if stocks go down, we very likely see interest rates come back down, which means bonds go up. And that's the correlation that investors have been looking for. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. We're going to go to the phones here. Let's see, Gil in Snellville. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help?
Yes. Good morning, Wes. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. What's going on? How can I help?
Yes. Question for you. We have a home equity line of credit. We also want to contribute that we want to pay off the equity line of credit. We also want to contribute to our Roth IRA this year in the sum of $13,000. And we also want to put money aside for our daughter's 529 plan.
Got it. So you've got a lot of different goals. You want to get rid of the equity line, make a Roth contribution, and put some money away for school. I got it.
Exactly. And we've got those funds in cash that we can pay it off, no problem. My question to you is, would it be wiser to pay it off with the cash, considering that it would wipe out our cash bucket, or take it out of the traditional IRA, which would be taxed, but considering that in itself would put us in a higher tax bracket?
Okay, so Gil, how old are you guys?
We're in our 60s.
All right, so you're able to take money out of an IRA without getting penalized. And how much do you want to, what is kind of the overall, what would satisfy the home equity line? How much do you guys owe?
The home equity line is around $26,000.
Yeah, I'm real careful about pulling money out of an IRA to pay off big balances. Now, in this case, oh, wow, we've got to go to a quick break. Hang on a sec, Gil. So I'm so enthralled with your call here. Hang on a second. We're going to go quick news, weather, traffic. We'll be right back to answer your question, Gil. Very important. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com. Stay tuned. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. So we were talking about trying to figure out whether you pay off your home equity line or not using your IRA money. You've got the home equity line. It's around 23. And you also want to do some Roth contributions, but then you also want to save some money for your, or I guess there's a tuition bill coming for your daughter, correct?
Correct.
How much, so you've got this cash. This is always a tough question, or it's a difficult to figure out for a lot of folks. Do you use that after-tax money and then spend all your cash, and then you're left with just IRA money or not? And I would be... Here's my rule of thumb on paying off a mortgage or a HELOC. My rule of thumb is this. If you can do it with a third, by spending a third or less of your after-tax money, not your IRA money, your after-tax money, then go ahead and do it. But it sounds like if you were to pay off the home equity line and do all these other things you want to do financially, would that spend all of your after-tax money in order to do so?
It would spend all the after-tax money that we have in savings. It would not in the Roth IRAs and investments that we have.
So I would say no to that. I would say you don't want to do that. That's becomes kind of the most sacred money when you get into retirement, is that after tax money, because you can get to it without paying taxes. I'd love to see you pay off the home equity line, but you also don't want to just pull a huge amount out of the IRA and then increase your adjusted gross income. So better yet, I would accelerate your HELOC payments. Maybe you double them up. Maybe you pay an extra $300 a month and do it that way so that you're not creating too high of a tax bracket for yourself and giving too much money to the government. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Find me and the Money Team, Money Matters team. Gosh, do we have time for a prize pack? Yes, we do. Quick. Family four-pack of tickets, Atlanta Gladiators game at the Infinite Energy Arena, and a pair of tickets to an evening with Audra McDonald on Saturday, March 3rd, Cobb Energy Center. The number 404-872-0750, third caller. We'll be back next Sunday, Money Matters, 9 to 11. Have a wonderful rest of the day. Stay tuned to WSB Best Programming on the Planet, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.